Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
So welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. On today's show, we have Dr. Sean Murray and as a guest here, very deep. We had talked a little bit before and we both presented at a luncheon here a couple weeks ago. But Dr. Murray, definitely a very valuable resource in the cyber community and locally known here very well. Dr. Murray, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. It's great to be here. I appreciate being on part of your program.
Yeah, well, definitely. And some of the topics that you had brought up and talked about with AI and the Internet of Things, very interesting. We'll try to get a little bit technical, but explain the technical things when we get there, but definitely a great show we have in store today. But Dr. Murray, first of all, give us a little bit about yourself, how you got to where you're at, your background, and where you come from.
So it's interesting. There's a big, I think cybersecurity is probably the second, only behind healthcare right now in the country as far as jobs needing to be filled. You know, interesting career over the years. I grew up a blue collar, you know, South Boston Irish kid, working construction and hospitality. You know, always had a job growing up, all family owned. So I had skill sets there where, you know, went into the Air Force right out of high school because we didn't have money for college and grades weren't that great. But, you know, I went into the Air Force, worked on nuclear weapons. I was a maintainer. It sounds cool, but basically take components apart, put them back together. And you know, so I signed up for one tour with the Air Force, got out, went back home. It's 1989 time frame. There wasn't much work back in Massachusetts, so my dad had some influence and got me a job out in Las Vegas working construction. So again, those skills as a kid came to use. But it's pretty hot in Las Vegas, and so that lasted a couple years, and I went into a competition and came in second place. So got a half-ride scholarship to broadcasting school. So I went through that program and actually got hired by the radio station that sponsored the program. So I was a...
You do have kind of that radio voice down here in it. There we go.
So yeah, I did a lot of... I was a DJ. I had all the garbage shifts. So Weekends, overnights, holidays. So I did that for a while. That was great. Had a lot of fun. My 20s were a blur. and then ended up following a gal that was stationed out at Nellis Air Force Base overseas. Didn't work out, but I decided, hey, you know what? I could get a job on base, work in hospitality, and you know, I could travel around Europe. You know, I was a young single guy with no ties, and so I did that. I was a cleanup guy. So we talk about controls. You know, in the food and beverage industry, we have controls there. You don't want food walking out the door or liquor walking out the door. So I was kind of a cleanup guy. I'd take over a nightclub or a club, a combined club, bowling center, and clean it up and put it back on its feet. It was usually
This is interesting. I'm still waiting for the cyber connection. <Right? laughs> Keep going, though.
And so it's coming. And so one of the things that happened in 1995 is we got rid of the old national cash register system and put in a computerized point-of-sale system called Aloha. And so I actually took the time and read all the documentation, and I input everything in, and it worked out so well that it reduced my cost of sales, and it reduced my cost of labor so much that we had to have an inspection because nobody could believe that we had the efficiencies that we did. And then I loved it. It was my first introduction to you know, technology. I mean, I was messing around with a Commodore 64, and I had, you know, small computers, but it really interested me, and so they hired me to go and deploy all of these point of sale systems throughout all the bases in Europe. And so that's was the, when I decided that's what I wanted to do.
So that's your, wow, interesting. Hold on a minute. We got to hear from our sponsor. Be right back.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
So welcome back. We're talking to Dr. Sean Murray today, and we were getting through his background. We just got to the point where we introduced that, you know, there's some digital, electronic connection here. We're getting out of the service industry. We're installing point of sale terminals. So go ahead and kind of continue on that.
Well, so in the meantime, I met another gal. She's active duty Air Force, and we ended up getting married, came back in 2000 timeframe, and I became the IT director at Hanscom Air Force Base where we got assigned. So as a government guy, and I was responsible for about 500 computer systems at 40 locations in two states. Mm-hmm. So MWR services, what the military would call them. So you're talking about those bowling centers that I used to work at, I'm now maintaining their systems. The point of sale system, the scoring system at the bowling center, the child development center database, which has got sensitive information on parents and children. So I got introduced to all kinds of different technology. The Air Force put me on a fast track. They paid for my bachelor's degree in CIS, then paid for a master's degree right after that. We got reassigned out to Peterson Air Force Base, where that's where my wife got mm-hmm. assigned. I ended up leaving government service, went to work for the Army here at Fort Carson back in 2006 timeframe. And I was the chief of cyber over all of the hazardous materials and hazardous waste program. Mm-hmm. So I ended up having to do all those certifications. So I actually have an environmental background as well.
And wow, that just trepping through. Now, not to cut you off, but just fast forward to now. And I'm doing this because your reputation precedes you in this area. Sure. Everybody here knows Dr. Sean Murray, and everybody knows his capabilities. And definitely an anchor in a community. Before I met you for a year, I heard your name from 20 places. So don't take that lightly. So that background leads to today, so many boards you sit on, so many industry input forums you run, you participate in curriculum development for more than one institution. I know you adjunct at more than one institution. Your reputation precedes you. So coming at this vast background and very technical, that is tremendous because most people that come from the policy, knowing all those big pictures and government, they've learned to make their decisions off of 3 points. You know, they're general. Give me the 3 simplest things and I'll pick in between them. But no, this is a very deep technical. We want to hear from you what those industry problems are that keep you up at night, that you see, hey, here's what our problems are, and hey, here's some solutions, the directions we need to look at.
It's funny because now the today's day and age, executives are starting to listen to the cyber people, and when I say cyber, the IT, right? And there's the cyber security aspect of it. CIOs are staying awake at night on some of these initiatives because they're responsible for the infrastructure, right? We don't have a big budget as cybersecurity professionals, but you know, it's that partnership. The things that keep me up right now, you know, this year I've been doing a lot of conferences around the United States, and the big issue that I see as one of the significant issues for businesses and homes and government is the Internet of Things converging with artificial intelligence. And so while either one of those brings its own concerns to the table, an organization that doesn't have a strategy on how they're going to manage, deploy, segregate networks to support the advances in the innovation the business is looking for is going to be significant. So you've got to have that security strategy.
So taking a step out of that to maybe an example, how many people would have an Alexa in their home, which is artificial intelligence, machine learning, it's an IoT device that's in your house,
sure,
connecting what data to where?
Yeah, that's the question, right? And so not everybody can always answer that. You get these big, long licenses that nobody ever reads and they just agree to. But yeah, those personal digital assistants, the Siri on your phone, whatever it may be, what is it doing with that data? One of the agreements that you sign up for is it's going in the cloud. It's going somewhere. It's always listening. It's always on. There's been experiments where you have these personal digital assistants talking to each other and not realizing that they're having that conversation. But at the same time, it's adapting to its environment. Mm-hmm. And it's trying to figure out what it is that you like. And then marketing companies want this data so that they can sell you products. So what are the agreements and the arrangements with that AI device, that Echo, that Alexa, whatever it is? How are they using that data? Europe has passed legislation that went into effect May of this year that really takes that challenge and puts it back on the developers of the technology, because privacy is significant in the European Union.
Significant, but in the United States, we look at it differently.
So we do, but we're starting to make some headway. In fact, 2 months ago, September of this year, Colorado passed the strongest legislation, not just passed, but enacted the strongest legislation in the country for privacy and cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if you're a small home-based business or you're a large corporation. The pervasiveness of the way that organizations collect, store, use, and transmit personal data has to be taken into consideration, the state is going to start issuing fines.
So, just like a sidebar to that, a loyalty program at a restaurant—I won't say which
one—I
went to sign up for, and they said, "Okay, in order to get our services, you get this card, you go home and register it, right?" So in order to register my phone number, it required that I allow their app to be on my phone.
Sure.
And in order to do that, you read the privacy policy, they were getting the right to track all your contacts, your location, anywhere you go,
sure,
so that they knew who they didn't say why, but obviously so they know who you're around, in what store, and where you go.
That's
for a loyalty program.
That is so valuable.
That doesn't benefit the consumer in any way. That's all for the company. So that intrusion of privacy that is entirely allowed, but GDPR, like you talked about, the European regulation, is looking at a different approach to that.
Sure.
Do you think that, it is impossible for me to use that app at all without accepting that policy?
Sure.
But GDPR says that has to change. Where do you see this in a couple of years?
Well, in the Colorado new legislation, Colorado says the same thing. It's funny we're having this conversation. I was at a ski shop in town here this past weekend, and we're getting board packages because we're getting ready to go skiing next week. And on the bottom of this form, it says, we get to use your information to market products to you and use it for other things. I'm like, so I said, hey, you may not be aware because this is your business, but there's a new law here in Colorado that says you have to provide me the option to opt out. And you can't provide me services and mandate that you get my information.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the new Colorado directive, is I have to have an option to opt out, and you cannot deny me services a regular customer would receive if they opted in. And so, and of course the guy's looking at me, I'm like, dude, I just
skis. Work here.
Yeah. And so I says, I got it. I says, here's my card, talk to your leadership. I'm letting you know I'm opting out of this option here. I want your services. I want the board packages, but I don't want you to market to me. Please pass this on to leadership. If I get an email, we're going to have a conversation.
Uh-huh. And so many apps though that are already out there don't even allow that. You can't install or use the app without agreeing to this.
Yeah, and a lot of those instances, and so that's where Apple and Google and Facebook, a lot of them are having challenges in Europe. The day after they passed GDPR, Google and Facebook both got hit with $4 billion in fines. Now, they're probably not going to pay that. There's going to be a negotiation, and legislators in the EU don't even know how they're going to assess for it yet. So, you know, it's coming. There's got to be an option to address that. Mm-hmm. And I think with California and Colorado passing the laws that they have this year,
It's a start.
And you know what's interesting is Small Business Development Center had a conference here with a keynote.
Let's take a note here from our sponsors. Okay. We'll be right back to finish that comment.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. We're here with Dr. Sean Murray. We were talking about the new regulation, both Colorado and California, and you were given an example when we kind of broke.
So yeah, one of the things that that I would like to see, I would like to see a national privacy law, mm-hmm. like GDPR that hits the, instead of each state developing their own. So think of a small business having to try and comply with 50 different versions of a privacy law. At the Small Business Development Center conference that was here in a couple weeks ago, one of the keynote presenters was. I'm trying to remember her name, Margie Graves. She is the deputy CIO for the U.S. federal government, so mm-hmm. appointed by the president. And one of the things I had asked her in the forum is, you know, don't you think that the United States should be driving privacy instead of having all of these different directives that being established by the states? And, you know, it's one of those, yes, I in my opinion, I think.
In her opinion.
And that's what I'm saying is, yeah, she said, yes, in my opinion, I think we should be driving that. But when we rack and stack our priorities.
And how disruptive is that to some of the largest companies in the world that would fight with their billions to be the opposite?
It's very, very, it's very valuable data. It's very valuable information. Privacy information, privacy data. So an organization trying to adapt to that environment that's large and global, it's going to take a huge investment in time and resources. And in the end, it may be cheaper to pay the fines.
And lose them the visibility that basically is the heart of their business model.
Sure. The great thing with GDPR, though, is not as only is there a monetary amount, so 4% of your gross global sales, but if you don't do your due diligence, due care, the executive officers in the organization could
be fined also.
No, go to jail. They can be actually sentenced to prison.
I hadn't read that close. So.
And so, yeah, that's now it's got their attention. So, uh-huh. You know, financially, especially if you're publicly traded, right?
So that way they can't just say, oh, 4% a year, that's a tax.
Right.
Yeah, interesting. So AI and IoT were your primary concerns. Where else do you see that, you know, we really need to focus and look at?
Yeah, we had an incident earlier this year. You know, we had you'd heard this in our presentation with Pikes Peak earlier this month or last month, and you know, we had a client. They contacted us, said, "Hey, we have what we believe to be a rogue system on our network, and we don't know where it is or what it is. Can you come help?" So our team shows up, and we work with another team, And this guy that I work with, he's got all the signatures for a lot of the Bluetooth, a lot of the wireless cards. We were able to find what the device was, and it was so interesting and alarming at the same time. We stopped the assessment. I requested to speak with the business associate that had hired us, and I wanted to speak with legal and HR. What we ended up telling them is, we believe we found what the device is, but our opinion is that you should update your BYOD, your bring your own device policy, where you're allowing employees to use their own devices on your network. And they're like, why? I says, well, you know, what we found on your device is a what we found on your network is a sexual device. And so we had to explain to them that, you know, if you don't tell the employees what's acceptable use on their network, and you go after the employee, you're looking at a lawsuit, possibly less risk here. So redefine your BYOD policy, and then once that's enacted and it's acknowledged by the employees, then, you know, call us back. And I mean, but we could go find it, and we could tell you what it is and where it is. We knew what it was. We
and
told
the,
them that.
And the cross between what it is and who has it becomes a privacy
right.
issue.
Right.
So that's why you had to stop what you were doing.
Right. That, well, you know, we could have moved forward, but the legal officer in the company actually appreciated our discretion by not going forward and finding the device and actually putting, you know, the physical device itself. And so these are the challenges that, you know, information security leaders and technology leaders are having to deal with right now when it comes to IoT and AI. We're just talking about the IoT issue. We're not even talking about the AI portion of it. If I've got a learning algorithm on the network that filter, you know, that ingests data, what kind of, you know, privacy data associated with that device that we found might need to be handled differently.
So I've had a couple conversations about this before, that we need a new confidentiality model when it comes to this, kind of a distance aggregation of data. You know, how can confidentiality of more information together tells the picture that leads to privacy violations and whatnot? So a new approach to looking at, you know, how much data, where it comes from, what it is about people, how many degrees of separation. What kind of a approach do you see that might look like in the future, where we have to change the way that our collection of data and how it comes together for privacy kind of all crosses?
Yeah, it's a good question, because one of the new jobs that are out there are data intelligence analysts. And so this, we're talking about, what do we do with all this big data? It's data. We need to turn it into information that's valuable to mm-hmm. someone. And when we're talking about the human, insurance companies and marketing industries, those are the two biggest industries that are using, manipulating the data, you know, to assess risk associated with issuing a policy for the insurance companies, or, you know, marketing, trying to sell products. As far as being able to separate, you take a look at, just look at one industry standard, PCI DSS, Payment Card Industry Data Security Standard for credit cards. Mm-hmm. They have six privacy principles that articulate, hey, you know, collect that only what you need to be able to process the transaction and no more. Be candid with the client, the customer. This is what I'm using your data for, and I can't use it for anything else unless I come back and get additional consent. And we just don't have enough authorities to be able to go in and do the assessments to ensure companies are going to comply. And so you're going to see spot checks, but big data is driving, you know, those two big industries, many others along with it. We don't have enough people in the right positions to be able to address it.
Do you think it's even regulatable? I mean, it just seems like government gets too involved at some level. You can't keep up with it.
What I see is, even if they try, I see that it's cost prohibitive. It's cost prohibitive from a government perspective. So when you investigate a crime, if you find something evidence-wise, then you look for more evidence and more evidence. I mean, we're talking terabytes of data. You're talking about cloud storage. At what point do you stop doing the assessment and you have enough evidence to be able to prosecute, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're doing discovery, you're supposed to get all of the discovery. And I think it's cost prohibitive.
Speaking of cost prohibitive, I listened to somebody from the United States Secret Service talk, and they gave an example of how they prosecuted somebody, and they were very proud of it. And they explained, well, we started this investigation in 2014.
Yeah.
And the amount of money that they spent going after one person, they can't do that with...
Right.
With more than one person.
Well, and you take a look at the internet, and a lot more people are starting to do more, you know, in the deep web, in the dark net. You know, there's 8 layers of the internet, and at what point do we no longer use the surface web, which is only 4% of the internet anyway, right? It's going to get a lot more difficult. There's more anonymization being used, and there's more than just Tor out there now, so...
Yeah, and that goes to the other topic I've heard you talk about, is that the between countries and jurisdictions and the internet. Explain that.
So one of the other concerns I've got, and I've been doing a lot of research on this over the last couple of years because it concerns me. If you think of the internet itself, so 8 layers, depending on who you talk to, but you know, you get the surface web, then you've got web 2.0 to web 3.0. But the fabric, the thing that makes the internet work is a federation of trust through the Border Gateway Protocol, which is a very vulnerable protocol. It is a federation of trust, various entities that provide the capability of routing internet traffic, whether it's business traffic, encrypted traffic, personal traffic. And there's been a lot of concerns with countries like Russia and China, you know, rerouting, adding malware to routing traffic so that traffic is now being filtered through those countries so they can gain intelligence off of that.
So they're looking to actually redirect and infiltrate the algorithm of how data is transitioned across the internet. Yeah, to go over networks that they can monitor.
Right, they're actually changing the routing instructions of the packets to, the instructions may say one thing, but when you get to the instructions where at the Border Gateway Protocol, it may look at the instructions that have been manipulated to flow traffic to those areas where we wouldn't necessarily think that they would go. Google just had a situation here almost 2 days ago, where there was a vulnerability in the Border Gateway Protocol routing in through a small ISP down in Nigeria, and Google lost connectivity and routing data for a couple hours, and it was being broadcast wide open. About a third of it was going through China. You know, it's you know, there's perspectives. Was it intentional? Was it malicious? Was it accidental? Google's position on it right now is it was accidental. You know, there's a lot more opinions on it out there. But if you think of the fabric of the internet is based on the Border Gateway Protocol, how do we secure a federation of trust? And right now, the only thing that I can think of, and it's one of the other technologies that I'm involved with this year, is blockchain. But blockchain provides that chain of custody based on a ledger. That ledger's got to be available 24/7, 365. If the ledger's not available, what's the problem associated with that? Well, you don't have the validation. You no longer have that chain of custody, right? But you also have latency. When you're talking about routing at the border gateway, how much latency can the internet withstand before we started getting a denial of service or a distributed denial of service? I don't know the answers to these. These are things that these are things that keep me up at night and that I continue to research.
So, and you're talking about routing traffic. What do you think about, you know, the borders between countries, between trusted networks or whatever, where they're putting almost censorship and, you know, determining jurisdictional boundaries and using these same type of things kind of at the heart of that?
So a lot of countries do that. They've been doing that for years. You go to the Middle East, anything having to do with, you know, pornography or even like the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition, that's tightly controlled. There is censorship in a lot of countries because they don't have the same laws that we do here in the United States mm-hmm. or the other Western world. You go to China, I mean, they're a communist dictatorship, right? So they're a lot more westernized than they were 20 years ago.
I've heard that we even do it in a lot of cases. Do you think this is a new era of escalated censorship?
Well, so we still have the problem associated with offensive cyber operations. And until we have the ability to provide attribution, valid attribution, you can't attack back. So, and that call right now is made at the highest level. It sits with, that authority sits with the president. So when you talk about our country or an organization filtering traffic based on whatever it is we feel it should be filtered at, it goes back to what laws are in place in our country that freedom of speech, those types of things where the government, you know, your freedom of speech is you and the government, not you and your employer. You have no freedom, you know, First Amendment with your employer, but you do with the government. So this is one of the reasons why, you know, we don't want the government regulating the internet in our country. There would be so many lawsuits.
Interesting. So definitely. So in kind of closing here, is there anything that you want to get out, what you do, how people can get engaged with you, services you sell, things like that?
So here in Colorado Springs, I'm more of an evangelist. I'm not growing my career anymore. You know, I'm helping others be successful. Participate in the community. I love doing stuff with other organizations, even with my own competitors. We develop ways to collaborate on things. There's a lot of social events. The local Chamber of Commerce, the local Small Business Development Center, the local BBB, Better Business Bureau. There's lots of things going on in the cybersecurity community. We have a large cadre of cybersecurity nonprofit organizations like ISC Square. They have chapter meetings. ISSA, the third largest chapter in the world, is right here in Colorado Springs. I happen to sit on the International Board of Directors, and it's that collaboration, the networking, helping people get jobs, workforce development. You know, look me up, come to one of our events every first Friday of the month. Come join us in 2019. We're signing an agreement with Jack Wins. We're our first Friday of every month. Come on up. It doesn't cost you anything. We're networking. We introduce, you know, like local companies in town that are doing, you know, contributing to the ecosystem. And we'd like to, you know, partner with anybody, introduce anybody to what's going on.
Well, we definitely have the same objective. So
all right.
It's good to have you on and good to connect
with
you.
Well, thank you again. I appreciate it.
Thanks for being a guest. Bye. The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.